Well, I've been slowly finishing my basement family room this year. So I spend my Saturday afternoons tinkering around down there. But this past week or so, my neighbor Mario, who is a drywaller by trade, helped me finish and texture the walls. He commented that I was smart. Now, he was not referring to my numerous degrees, my years of schooling, my knowledge of Hebrew, my training in the ministry, or my almost doctorate degree. He was commenting that I knew how to do things, that I had done the work myself, that I picked up what he was showing me. And he didn't say I was handy or knowledgeable or even good with tools. He said I was smart. So Mario's accolade took me back to my upbringing, to Western New York, where the trades were much more valued than formal education, where practical knowledge was far more sought after than book knowledge, where people who spend their life as a student are looked on with a little suspicion. Mario's accolade took me back to my grandfather, who would remark with a scowl if you did something he deemed stupid, "You been to school," he'd say. He was a farmer. He worked with his hands. He had a little place for those who didn't. Mario's accolade took me back to my extended family, who valued hard work as high as anything. For them, it was hard work that was next to godliness, not cleanliness. Work, drive, that will to do what you need to do it one day after the next, to do it without complaining. That initiative to make the most of your opportunities, to not be overwhelmed by the magnitude of things, but to put your hands to what you can do. That drive to make a way that is a result of your own choices. It is a value celebrated as part of that vision of the American dream that if you are willing to work hard, you can achieve. We hear it in the poem this morning. This image of brothers in line for work, willing to take the work they can get, to work nights in a factory, to study, to pursue a dream, to sacrifice, to work for something. I've been thinking of work this week, with this being Labor Day weekend. I did a little reading about the origins of Labor Day. I thought Nancy Ulrich would be here to educate us, though. Seems like something she would have a wealth of knowledge about. But that Labor Day, from what I read, came out of years of struggle and a degree of unrest in the late 19th century. It came out of protests and strikes aimed to protect children from long hours on factory floors, from exploitation, to give workers certain protections, like a weekend and an evening and a reasonable work week. Labor Day, it seems to me, both celebrates the opportunities and rewards of hard work. It celebrates the laborer's virtues and opportunities, but it also speaks to that tendency that we have as humans to exploit the work of others. The fact is that the basic dignity and protections of the worker, it had to be fought for. Those with power would often extract work, long hours of it, while paying little or offering no benefits. Today, a simple campaign contribution can kill a labor union just like that. And it seems to me that the rewards of the labor movement, they're often portrayed as negatives in our rhetoric these days. The things of the labor movement, I mean, such as unions and weekends, vacations, health benefits, pensions, good wages. If you go championing for such things today, you might be accused of what? Who said it? Who said the S word? Socialism. Is that what you said? Yeah, socialism, handouts, entitlements. These get cast as negative things. If you're willing to work for these things, the rhetoric goes, you're looking for handouts. You're entitled. See, it seems that hard work also, the language of hard work, also becomes taken up by those who don't actually work with their hands. It's taken up by those who tell us to be happy with what we have and to work harder. It's co-opted by those who would actually exploit the labor of others. I think of what Anne Kleinkopf shared last week. One of the things she shared was concerning the travails of those seeking asylum here. And she spoke of how asylum seekers come, often desperate, hopeful, often ready to work, yet as a part of the systems and the rules put in place by our government, they are not able to. They're prevented from working according to the rules. And so we accuse them of freeloading even while we prevent them from work. Perhaps one example of the way the language of hard work gets twisted and used as a bludgeon of exploitation or injustice. And this tendency to take advantage of and exploit those without voice or security or protections is not something new. In fact, when we visited the Black Canyon of the Gunnison this summer, we watched a video of its history. And one of the things they talked about was this railroad tycoon who wanted to build a railroad through the Black Canyon, chiseling away at all that black granite. And it took several years to just to do a handful of miles on the upper part of the canyon. And you know who did the back-breaking, dangerous work of this man's dream? Take one guess.
Immigrants.
Irish and Italian. Micah and the other prophets speak to similar abuses in their day. Micah and others remember, they remember the ideals of covenant and community, of caring for one another, of protecting the vulnerable, of showing hospitality to the sojourner. They remember the bonds of family and community and care. And they see these values as intertwined with the worship of the Lord. You can't worship the Lord without the other. And you can't do the other without the worship of the Lord. They're connected. And yet they live in a time where cities have become urbanized, where you have rich and poor, and family and community bonds have weakened or otherwise come apart. And so not only is the worship of the Lord now detached from community and covenants and care, it's now directed by the king and the wealthy, kind of a symbol of that breakdown. And so Micah confronts this incongruity between celebrating the worship of the Lord while also exploiting the vulnerable. Worship of the Lord, for Micah, goes hand in hand with care for the vulnerable. To return to our poem, though, even amid strife and struggle, for the person struggling along, there is something empowering about hard work and doing what you can. And I think of the young men in this poem struggling to get somewhere, feeling the stress, the sadness even, wanting to cry or express love. And yet there is a dignity and a hope and a resolve that comes through working, through seeking opportunities, through standing in that line, not knowing what will come. Work and that drive to do what one has, what one can, is a type of hope. Because our drive to work is one way to hold at bay the overwhelming realities of our out of our control. It is a way to wrest back some control. It is a way to express the belief that we will make it, that God will be faithful, that all will come together in the end. And in our epistle to the Hebrews, the writer goes on, in the part we didn't read, he goes on for 11 chapters, primarily talking about faith and the background and roots of belief. It's a recounting and a rehashing of the whole faith and its foundations. But in the waning chapters of Hebrews, the writer turns to more practical workings out, to what, as a believer, you might do, not just what you might believe. And our passage this morning falls amidst that practical turn. You see, the author recounts the faith But these faithful ones still live in a society in which they are a political and numerical minority. They don't get to control society or policy or any such thing. They can only control their own choices, their own ways of being in the world. And like the rhetoric of faith and hard work in my growing up years, our passage pushes us towards and grounds us in things, grounds us in things that matter, in the things that we can do. It pushes us to consider the places where we might live by our values. That whatever's going on in the world around us, we can embody our beliefs. Embody the belief that God will be faithful in the end and that all things will come together. And so what are the things we can do according to the writer of Hebrews? We're admonished to show hospitality to strangers. That is, the people who are not in your family or close circle. We are implored to practice empathy, that practice of suffering with other people. It reads, remember those who are in prison as though you were in prison with them. Those who are being tortured as though you yourselves were being tortured. That's a tall call of empathy. We are called to show fidelity in our relationships, to keep your lives free of the love of money, to be content with what you have, trusting that God is with us and will not forsake us. We are entreated to remember your leaders and those who spoke the word of God to you. Consider the outcome of their way of life and imitate their faith. Not just remember other figures in your life, but to imitate what it was that you looked up to in them. This litany of things we are encouraged to do reminds me of that old ethic of hard work. For there is a value of expressing one's character, of living out a certain set of values, of expressing faith through actions. There is, as in the poem, a link between faithful action and the fabric of love and family and community. There is a faith and a hope expressed that by doing these things, we will make it. That God will be faithful and we will be proud at the end of the day. These admonitions to practical action are aimed not at paying bills, but aimed at being true to a sense of self, to a sense of community and calling amidst the world. And so what does it mean, to live faithfully in a world out of your control? Well, we're given a few things. Embody your values, practice hospitality and empathy and generosity and fidelity, to not seek wealth, to learn from your predecessors and to imitate them, to grow in faith and action. So as adherents to the Judeo-Christian tradition and as followers of Christ, we are called to protect the worker. We heed the prophet's call to protect those prone to exploitation and to challenge and call out the exploiters. But at the same time, we are called to do with integrity the things we can, to work hard, to express our values. And even in the midst of an overwhelming world, these expressions of work and faith embody their own type of hope, their own confidence that God will be faithful and come through in the end. And as I learned back in Western New York, it is not enough to express faith verbally, to just say all will be fine. You have to show your faith. You have to show that all will be fine through your work, through your effort, through your action. You express your love for God by using your hands. You show your confidence by action. So in a world filled with much concern and angst, in a time when you might be feeling your own concerns and angst over circumstances, let us remember to embody faith and confidence, to embody our values, to do as the writer of Hebrews says, to not neglect to do good, to share what you have, for such sacrifices are pleasing to God. And all God's people said, Amen. Would you stand with me as you're able and let us sing our hymn?